I'm not quite convinced with that, really, because there's the same idea, isn't there, you may have come across, where when you, if you're asked to draw a pig on a bit of paper, depending on how you draw the pig will say something about you, which is just rubbish. You know, whether you draw the pig facing left or right or straight, I mean, what difference does it really make? And in the same way, I think, although yes, maybe your shoes might say something about what you do in terms of a career or that sort of thing, you're probably not going to turn up to in stilettos to a building site. At the same time, there's a limit to what we can really grasp from our footwear. So we've looked over the last couple of months, if you've been with us, we've looked at different individuals and different stories. And I want us to ask the question as we conclude this evening, who will fill their shoes? Who will fill the shoes of those that we've looked at? Some of the people in the series you may have heard of before. Evan Roberts and the Welsh Revival, or Mike Pilavarci and Soul Survivor. You may have come and heard and gone, yeah, I know something about that person. Others, you may have never come across before, but you may have heard something of their kind of story. Maximilian Kolb, the saint of Auschwitz, someone who gave up, took someone else's place to go into the firing line. Or Jim Elliot, this idea of a guy who went to try and reach a completely unreached group of people, and it cost his life, and he never actually saw the fruit of his ministry. And so there may be people like that, we know kind of bits of their stories. There may be others, though, like this evening, that we might just go, who are they? We're going to consider someone called Tracy Evans, and that may be the first time you've ever heard that name. Maybe you read it on the card and thought, kind of, I'm not quite sure who she is. I get some of the others, but with her, there just doesn't seem to be, well, anything to go on. She was born in the early 60s, and I say early 60s because I'm not quite sure when she was born, and that's not because I haven't kind of researched and looked into it, but because actually you can't find out those sort of details about her. You go on her Facebook page, and it talks about the ministry that she's involved in. You look in terms of the websites, and again, it all focuses on what God is doing and the opportunity she has to serve him. There aren't the kind of the biog details of she was born here in this place and that, so on and so forth. You read bits, and you can pick up parts of her story, but from the outset, she's someone who is seeking to live a life sold out for her Saviour and her King. If you wanted to kind of, in a nutshell, sum her up, she's served as a Christian medical missionary in 64, I think possibly even 65 countries over 30 odd years. So she's travelled immensely, going where she believes God has wanted her to do. And even kind of statistics like that don't really sum her up and don't really, I think, capture who she is and what she's done. If you scroll back a bit in her life, though, she was actually honourably discharged from the army in America. Not because she'd been up to no good and causing trouble and that sort of thing. Oh, well, some people thought she was. She was honourably discharged because of her passion for Jesus. She describes it saying she was all zeal and no wisdom, cramming Jesus down everyone's throats. She also kind of reflected on the fact that actually she could have been sectioned as medically kind of insane, because she was that sold out, wanting to tell people about Jesus. And her commanders kind of said, you know, we're going to honorably discharge you. And she was initially kind of, well, no, I'm not going to take that. You know, this is where God wants me. And they then came back about a few weeks later and said, no, we're going to honorably discharge you. This is the option, the only option. Otherwise, it doesn't look so good. Because there's this raw obedience and this radical faith within her that you see as you unpack her story. Just bubbles up within her, and is something that's I found very infectious, just exploring her story. Before we look at that, though, there's various different kind of biblical accounts and references she makes within this book, Outrageous Courage, that kind of is talking about her life. But one which I really think kind of says something about who she is, and I think there's a lot of similarities. I just want us to reflect on briefly from Daniel chapter 3. If you've got a Bible, I'd invite you to turn it on or open it. As we're going to read six verses, very familiar maybe, a classic Sunday school story, but as I say, I think captures something of who she is and the impact and the difference she makes. King Nebuchadnezzar, it says, made an image of gold 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide and set it on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officers assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "Nations and people of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all other kinds of instruments, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." It's the story where we find Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Daniel's three friends, in the midst of this challenge. They're administrators in the province of Babylon at this stage. And God, if you look at the wider story, has been blessing them immensely and doing wonderful things and helping them progress and succeed in ways that in many ways don't make any sense if God isn't involved. And this image of gold, it is set up, and very simple, whenever you hear the sounds, all the multitude of instruments, you need to bow down and worship it. Anyone who doesn't will be thrown into the furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego worship the one true risen king, the one God. And so they won't bow down. They won't worship this gold idol that's been built by men. But as the passage goes on, if you read further, some astrologers basically tell tales on them and say, kind of, these three guys have not done what you said, King Nebuchadnezzar. And so they're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace, as has been agreed. And if you look further down, I love their response. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to King Nebuchadnezzar, "We do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." Even if they're not saved, they're still willing. They still know what they believe. They're still wanting to put their necks on the line. And this, maybe understandably, riles the king a little bit. So he orders it to be heated even hotter, the furnace. Even some of the guards standing round die because of the heat. 7 times hotter. And so they're thrown in. And a fourth man appears. The king's like, kind of, what's going on here? And so they're called out. And the king recognizes, you know, there's not a singe on them, not a hair, slightly burnt. And so he recognizes, actually, okay, your God is something special. And he is something a bit different. And he says, anyone who says anything against their God, basically not nice things are going to happen to. And there again we see promoted and blessed. Blessing is poured out upon them. The easy thing would have been for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to bow down, to succumb, and to kind of think, well, actually, if we just cross our fingers, it won't really count, and we'll then just continue to blend in. Life's pretty good at the moment. Why should we upset things? Why should we seek to stick our necks out when we don't need to? The thing was, they knew who they were living for. They knew who they were worshipping. They knew the journey that they were on, and they knew that course was not one to be deviated from, whatever the cost. And I wonder whether you look at that moment and that defiance as they would have possibly been standing feet maybe from that furnace. And they said to the king, you know, we're not going to bow down to you. Our God can save us, but even if he doesn't, we're still not going to bow down to you. And as I've explored the story of Tracy Evans, someone whose raw obedience and radical faith, something that's evident in terms of how she's lived her life and what she's doing right now, I see a number of similarities there in terms of the challenge that I believe is before us. If we consider her story very briefly for a moment, at 16 she was given a car by her grandparents, so she left home. and she lived out of the car. She joined the military at 17, initially in military intelligence. And while she was awaiting to hear whether she'd gotten to West Point, this was in the 70s when West Point had just been opened to women, she was waiting to hear. It was at that point that she discovered Jesus. One of her fellow officers or people who she was kind of in the military alongside was a Christian, and for months she had belittled her and had a go at her and made fun of her and just made her life, can I use that phrase, a living hell. But something got through to Tracy Evans. Something changed within her. She describes it was as if the idea of someone who falls in love, they just won't shut up about whoever it is, about the way it makes them feel, about how they are changed forever by it. And that's apparently what happened to her. Thus, she was honorably discharged from the army because she was just out of control. The rawness in many ways of her faith was such, as we'll see, that it was almost uncontrollable to the extent that it was almost a little bit unruly, almost a bit too much. And so she left the army, went to Weaverville, and it was there that she really found out her faith was grounded, but not in a kind of sense of being watered down and made safe, but actually she was able to begin to grow and head on in this journey of discipleship, of actually kind of, so who is this God? And what difference does he make? And how does this need to impact my life and the way that I live my life? She was based got to know the Bethel Church in Redding, California, before then, after a couple of years, moving to LA and getting involved with YWAM. Spent some time there working in various projects, a lot of them working, getting women off the street, out of prostitution, supporting them in safe houses, before moving to the Philippines and spent a couple of years in Manila working at the Smoky Mountain. And her story continues, and she ventured to various other places, finally returning back to Weaverville in the early 90s. And that was when, with the outpouring of the Holy Spirit that was taking place at that point, really met God in a powerful way. And suddenly everything was turned up even more in her life. And then in the late 90s, since 1999, she actually was sent out to Mozambique and has been based in there since then, developing and furthering a mission called I Reach Africa. And you look at some of the statistics that this ministry has developed. They've got a baby clinic, a feeding program, a hospice recovery center. They serve over 900 orphan infants, many who are HIV positive. They've planted 21 churches. They've built a preschool. They've developed two prison ministries. And it goes on and it goes on. But again, she's not the figurehead of it. She's maybe the point that people kind of go off from her to this, but it's not like it's the Tracy Evans ministry. Thus, you can't find out much about her by going through it. And so you look at her and you kind of sense, here's someone who has, as I say, that same raw passion that we read about in Daniel 3. You read just the first chapter of the book, the minister who's writing it writes about this account of her determination to get back into the Philippines when she'd been ejected, and what she went through because she wanted to continue the ministry that she felt God had set before us. And I think there's lots of different things that we could take from her life, from her story, and things we could consider. I want us just briefly to reflect on three things that I think maybe can speak into our lives, maybe speaking into yours particularly. See, from Tracy Evans, she was someone who had to wait on God's timing. She had to wait for the time to be right to do what she believed God had set before her. After her honorable discharge, she describes herself as she was hungry for adventure and as zealous as ever to tell people about Jesus. But she said she wasn't ready, though. I still knew very little of the Bible or the basics of the faith. I'd only just beginning to learn to hear God's voice. I'd never been part of the church family. I needed basic training on how to be a disciple. And she sought to trust God and actually grow and develop. from what you read, it wasn't easy always, kind of, because it's that sense of having to wait, and it can be really frustrating sometimes when you feel God's placed something on your heart and you want to go and do it, and it, you kind of, there seems to be, I've got to do this, and then I've got to do that, and so on and so forth. But we see here someone who was willing to hear from God and wait on his timing. And I think for us then, are we willing to trust God? Not to sit back and kind of think, oh, I've not got to do anything. But actually, if God's setting something before me, what does that mean? When is that going to come to fruition? How do I need to be moving forward in that? So she had to wait on God's timing. She had to learn from failure. Many people, she says, do not extract the nutrients from their failures because they feel ashamed of them. But God does not feel the same way. There's a number of different stories you can she shares and are shared in the book about her. One of which, when she's working in the hospital in Weaverville as a nurse aide, and she's told by the head nurse she can't pray for any of the patients or preach to them or talk to them. This has been going on for some time, and almost if it, she does it again, she's going to be dismissed and she'll lose her job. And so there's just stop it. And this one evening, the bell goes for the kind of outer door, and so she goes out with the head nurse to see who's there. And there's this guy who's been experiencing chest pains. He's come from a party with his wife, and so the head nurse realizes they need to get a doctor. So she goes back in to get a doctor, and in the few moments, Tracy Evans says she was standing there with this guy. She really felt God saying, "You need to tell him about Jesus. You need to tell him about me," and it's really, really urgent. This is not something to put off, and just kept going around her head. And she says she kind of had this real sense that that's what she needed to do, but out of fear, she took his vital signs instead and didn't say anything to him beyond just kind of checking he was still there and that sort of thing. Nurse comes out with the doctor, and within moments, the guy goes into cardiac arrest and he dies right before them. And there's this sense of actually kind of learning from the things that don't go well. And so there's a number of other times when she shares things that she just messes up completely. And it'd be very easy to kind of go, well, actually, I didn't hear from God in that moment, so obviously I can't hear from God, so obviously I shouldn't try to hear from God, and just write it off. And those moments where maybe we try and do something, or we try and share with someone, or we don't share with someone, and kind of going, well, obviously God doesn't want to use me. But actually, how do we learn from things we get wrong, from the mistakes we make? So she had to wait on God's timing. She had to learn from failure. She also needed to change. It's a great story, you know, from the off. She's, you know, passionate about Jesus to the extent that she gets thrown out of the army. You think, that's brilliant, isn't it? That's what you want. You know, people on fire for God. While she's in the working with YWAM in LA, there's one of the pimps comes in one evening to get some of the girls back, and he's a massive bloke, comes in quite aggressive. Her response to him is to run at him with her fists and start punching him, to the extent that he runs off, and she's ends up kind of cutting herself in this because of the fight that ensues. And when kind of everything settles down and the manager of the home kind of comes to and talks to her and says, this is a problem, he says. And she's thinking, what? I've got rid of him. I've sorted the problem. Why is there a problem? And he says, this is not the way to minister Christ's love and reconciliation to these people. And it's this challenge that her heart was in the right place. She wanted, in this instance particularly, to protect those girls. But the way she went about it wasn't showing Christ's love. And it's, I think, a really powerful challenge. You read the story of another example of someone who actually, you know, wasn't perfect from the off, didn't get it all right, and needed to change. And even having discovered Jesus and seeking to be used by him and minister for him, still didn't get it right, still needed to be moving forward and changing along the way. I think the thing that strikes me about Tracy Evans and about all the different people that we've looked at over the last couple of months is, as kind of the tagline said, you know, God works through ordinary women and men. He's been doing that since kind of the beginning, and I believe he still wants to do that now. I think the challenge for us is to say, kind of, Will I step up and be one of those people that God does amazing things through? However, let's be honest, ordinary I am. Am I willing to seek to fill the shoes of some of those that have gone before? Although actually, in many ways, I think that's the wrong question, to be honest. It's not about trying to fill their shoes. It's not about thinking, well, this person went off to this far off country, so I need to do that. Or this person went and worked with, you know, the homeless or prostitutes, so I must do that. But actually, I believe it's about saying, will I fill my shoes? Will I actually step into the shoes of who I've been created to be and God has called me to be? And will I move forward for him in them? Will I take hold of the opportunity and the responsibility to hear the call of God on my life? And say, okay, God, let me move forward for you. We're going to pray in a moment. Before we do that, though, I want us to conclude. We're just going to watch a short clip, which is Tracy Evans sharing herself. And I think it just captures something of her heart, of her passion, and the challenge before us as to how we can each live our ordinary lives in amazingly powerful ways for God.